At the bottom of the North Sea is a lush plain that not that long ago, at least not that long ago in geological time, was home to hunter-gatherers. But rising sea levels completely submerged the land, now called Doggerland, by the year 5500 BC. Vincent Gaffney, the chair in landscape archaeology and geomatics at the University of Birmingham in England, is the leader of the North Sea Paleo Landscapes Project. That project is using 3D seismic data to further study Doggerland. This week, he's on the University of Arkansas campus. Tonight at 6:30, he's delivering a lecture about the secrets of Stonehenge. But yesterday, he discussed his study of Doggerland. And before that lecture, he stopped by the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio.
In the last 20,000 years, the shape of the world changed dramatically. Large portions of the land, terrestrial land, were inundated as the temperature warmed, as the glaciers retreated in the northern hemisphere, and sea level rose, and it covered up areas which had been home to men and women for thousands and thousands of years. These were areas which people knew the hills they were named, the rivers they knew, the land they lived on, and they were just lost to history and memory.
But now, thanks to technology developed thousands of years later, we can learn more about it, can't we?
Absolutely. And the area we're talking about, just to give you some sort of idea, the area I work in is Northwest Europe, and that's sort of bounded by France, Britain, and Norway. And at the time we were talking about, initially from 18,000 BC, the frontier of Europe was up near Norway. Britain wasn't an island, everyone's very used to, I think, the shape of Britain, and the British are very used to the shape of Britain, and you know, we define ourselves as an island race. But then it was just a range of hills on the edge of Europe, nothing more. And over time, the world changed what it is today, and you know that makes us in many ways. But in the past, it was very different, and now we've managed to find ways of starting to explore that.
I would imagine that it has been, for some time, difficult to study. I mean, you're talking underwater.
Let me tell you just how difficult and why this is quite so interesting. 10 years ago, I regularly held a seminar on strange landscapes. And in one of those seminars, we treated the Mesolithic. Now, the Mesolithic is the Middle Stone Age. It's a period about 10,000 BC through to about 5,000 to 4,000 BC in the British Isles, and it's interesting for one specific reason for me, because in 1931, a British trawler called the Kalinda was pulling in its nets, and the skipper, a guy called Pilgrim Lockwood,
that's a great name,
wonderful name, was breaking up the moorlog. Now, the moorlog were great big bits of peat that were scraped up from the bottom of the seabed, and he was hacking cumbersome for the fishermen, because they damaged the nets, they bruised fish, they didn't want this stuff, but they kept on dragging it up, and they had for at least 100 years previously, and you know, mechanized trawling produced even more of the stuff. But he was hacking a meter cube of this stuff up when his shovel hit something, and he pulled it apart, and inside was a rather beautiful bone harpoon.
Huh.
It had inscribed lines on it. It was serrated, and he looked at it and he thought, that's interesting. I rather think he thought he could sell it, because he actually says he found it by taking this big lump of stuff down into his cabin, and he broke it open just to see what it was before the rest of the men. But he took it back to Britain, and it went to the British Museum, and it was studied, and they said, yes, this is from this period called the Mesolithic, and it's rather interesting. Why is it out in the middle of the North Sea, near the Leman and Ua Banks, which is not far from the famous Dogger Banks in the North Sea? And he then showed it to some academics in Cambridge. And they looked at it and they said, this is interesting because we don't think it was just dropped in the middle of the North Sea. Some passing person on a canoe didn't drop it. And what they did was they actually took a sample of the peat from nearby and they analysed it with through the pollen that was held in the material. And they realised that at that point in time, the area had been dry land.
Huh.
And it wasn't just a passing boat. It had to be someone walking across the North Sea. Now, that shouldn't have been such a surprise because 20 years earlier, a guy called Clement Reid, who was a member of the British Geological Survey, had in his retirement produced a book on submerged forests. Now, he had looked at forests which were fossilised but were preserved below the waterline. And he'd realised that at some point, areas much beyond the terrestrial landmass of Britain must have been dry land. And by studying these, he had suggested that all the area below the 36-metre bathymetric point, that's about 100 metres below sea level, must have been dry land. And he realised that the North Sea itself would have been a great big plain. Now, he understood it was important. He said that this is an area where people would have been better to live there than anywhere else at that point in time. But he couldn't date when this land existed, and it was inaccessible. And he made this comment. He said, "Well, even though everything that is going an archaeologist might wish to study might be there preserved underwater, all the wood, the textiles, and everything else," he said, "actually, what I think is going to happen is that the geologists are going to look at this and say too recent, and the archaeologists are going to look at it and say too old, and everyone is going to pass on." And he's absolutely quite right. That was actually what happened until the find from the Kalinda.
If you are in the study of geology or archaeology or a related field, this is not surprising to you. But, you know, you're asking lay people to rethink about the world in a way they're not used to. And it kind of grounds you, I think, to realize that things do change and can change again.
Yes, and perhaps it's an appropriate tale for current times. There is, of course, a huge debate upon climate change, but this period we're talking about was the last one during which climate change of a scale that we are anticipating occurred within the world. Now, I'm not saying it was man-made. That would be preposterous. It's an entirely natural event. And you may derive whatever you wish about the current debate about what is driving climate change. But the chances are that climate change is real, and chances are it is likely to be catastrophic, and to some extent it is likely to be catastrophic. You have to put against that what happened 20,000 years ago through to about 5,500 BC. During that time, Europe lost 20-30% of its land area. Mm. The people who lived in that land were pushed off. There is undoubtedly evidence for a rise in violence during this time. There's evidence for changes possibly in respect of land ownership and tenurial patterns, possibly caused by stress from movement of population at various times. Well, we can be quite sure that the change which was enforced at this time was problematic and deeply distressing, but people had the capacity to change. They were probably able to move. The population stabilised in a land that was generally underpopulated. In the future, where are all our cities? Mm. They are all on the coasts.
Right.
Where are these people going to go if there is major climate change and sea level rise again? Now, I'm not going to suggest that the scale of rise will occur in exactly the same way. There was about 120 metres rise after 18,000 BC. Mm. Now, that may not happen, but relatively small amounts of change is likely to have large impacts on large populations around the world.
Is there any way to know how quickly that rise happened?
Well, the pace of change is very difficult. We really do not have that information at the moment. It will require a lot more evidence for that refined chronology. I mean, we know where the coastline started at the end of the last ice age. We know where we begin, but the change was probably not linear.
Right.
There were major changes in quite short times when, for instance, great ice lakes in North America, the dams burst. There were rapid changes in sea level rise in the North Sea as well. So that could happen very rapidly. In most cases, the change was insidious. It took a long time, but at other periods, it could have been quite short periods.
Vincent Gaffney is the chair in landscape archaeology and geomatics at the University of Birmingham in England and the leader of the North Sea Paleo Landscapes Project, studying the area at the bottom of the North Sea called Doggerland. And tonight at 6:30, as part of the Sigler Lecture Series at the University of Arkansas, he'll discuss the secrets of Stonehenge.
Yes, we'll be looking at real secrets. We're going to be looking in between the monuments of Stonehenge, at the areas where people have never looked and finding out what is there.
That's part of the discipline here, right? Looking where people haven't looked before.
Absolutely.
But with Doggerland and with Stonehenge.
Yeah, people should always understand most of the world is actually terra incognita. It has never been explored.
That lecture about the secrets of Stonehenge is tonight at 6:30 in room 148 of the J.B. Hunt Building on the University of Arkansas campus. It's part of the Sigler Lecture Series and is sponsored by the Department of Anthropology, the Department of Geosciences, and the Environmental Dynamics Program.